This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Fans of public radio are well acquainted with the show Radiolab. It's too simple to call it a show about ideas, but it's a good start. Heard around the country on more than 300 radio stations, the show has tackled such topics as falling, music, color, and whether exploding atomic bombs affect beer quality. None of these, aside from music, would seem an appropriate or even doable subject for radio. But for hosts Jad Abumrad and Robert Krulwich, there truly are no boundaries. Jad and Robert brought the stage version of their show, Radiolab Live, in the dark to Milwaukee in September, but first, they joined me from their studios in New York City. Gentlemen, it is such a pleasure to have you on the line on the ISDN. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Let's start with Radiolab itself and why audio? Why that medium to explore science and philosophy and ideas? What does removing the visual do for you and make you able to tell those stories better?
Well,
I never thought of it as removing the visual.
No.
I think, I think you're getting at something. I think that this thing that we do, and maybe this is true of all radio people, is powerful precisely because of what it doesn't have, which is the visuals. So yeah. You're forced to kind of go into an act of co-making the visuals with the person on the other end.
Yeah.
And so, I
did TV for a long time, and it's sort of fun, really. Instead of showing somebody, a house on a mountain, you just say, "Look, there's a house. Make it a small house on top of a, let's make it a hill, a green hill." Now, if you did that on television or in a movie, you'd make your own hill.
You got to show them the hill. It's just
right. And then some people say, "That's not my kind of hill. I would make the hill bigger."
The hill looks cheap.
Yeah.
So what kind of hill is that?
But see, this way, if you make your own hill, then we're off the hook. It's your hill. And you've become our co-author in the meantime. So we've just hooked you, double hooked you.
That's true. There's some
production expenses to be saved. And you've
made me do the
work. And yeah, exactly.
Well,
this is a Tom Sawyer kind of experience.
That's actually an important point, because I feel like if you're doing the work with us, if we're doing our job, which is to pull you in just enough so that you imagine the Purple Hill, then that's like an act of empathy. We're like in a connection there, which I think is great about radio.
Plus the fact that we are, if you're listening on an iPod, we're in your head. And if you're listening in a car or something like that, then we're almost in your head. The act of TV is an act of staring. So you're a bit aware of the fact that there's something between you and it, a cat, a husband, a child, mm-hmm. a bird, a distraction. But with the radio, you're a little bit closer to the audience. And in the podcast version, you're in the audience, physically inside in a way. So that's the second advantage.
Yeah. And, the thing we really have to mention is we're in radio for the big bucks.
Yes.
I knew it.
The enormous wealth that comes flowing to us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I knew there was an ulterior motive.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was shocked, for example, that the $1.25 price of Hershey bars here in New York. But I thought, I don't have to worry about that extra quarter because I work for public radio. I could even eat the Hershey bars with the almonds.
I could even maybe have just a little extra little segment.
You might be able to have two, Robert. Two Hershey bars.
I don't know if I go that far. Maybe one day if I go into super public radio, whatever that is.
The super PAC of public radio.
Maybe the BBC. Maybe they get to eat Cadbury's.
Mm. Mm. Or galaxies.
Well, wow.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, so it would be nice to be the Toblerone person, the Toblerone talent. But I don't know what we'd have to do that. We've ended up in the weird place we were trying to avoid.
But that's okay. But that's what Radiolab does. That's what I love about your show, is because it takes you to a place you never thought you were going to go.
Yes. Sometimes.
Usually not chocolate, but hey.
Yeah. Why not? Have you done a show on chocolate?
No, not yet.
No, chocolate has made no appearances in our show. No. Frankly, it's a blind spot.
Yes, that's true.
Really?
Their agent keeps calling, but we want chocolate to have the right furniture, and we haven't yet found just how to do the decoration for him.
Okay.
Yet.
Well, that leads me into the question about production meetings and about choosing topics. I mean, how do you sit down and figure out this is probably going to work and this is great, but we haven't figured out the furniture yet?
That's a good question.
I usually at the ankle, and then I've been trying to get up and down, for example, and I will just basically chew on maybe his lower pant leg for about a year. And at that point, maybe he'll say, maybe, which means that I'm at first base.
Well, to answer the question, actually, that's not too far from the truth, aside from the chewing part. You know, it's like these ideas have to kind of spook you, and then you carry them around for a while. Mm-hmm. And then maybe after you've lived with them for a few weeks, you bring them to the group. And if the group doesn't quite, by the group, I mean Robert, but we also have a bunch of producers, Soren Wheeler, our senior producer, and a bunch of people who work with us who are very, very smart, and they tear it apart if it's not a smart idea.
They do.
And if the idea doesn't tear, then you live with it a little bit more, and then eventually you end up making it. But you have to somehow marry these ideas, and they have to be good idea spouses.
Yeah, and a good idea attracts other good ideas. So the real nature of a good idea is if you mention, say, let's talk about color, and then someone says, well, let's talk about eyes and rods and cones, and then someone says, well, but what about crayons and Crayola? And then someone says, well, what about the blues and so on? And then one thing sort of slips into another, sort of like hand in glove. Then you move along pretty fast. And that's really what it takes. It takes an idea that gets friends quickly.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that there's too much to include, that all of those wonderful ideas, that are times you have to leave some of them out?
Sure, yeah.
We leave a lot out.
Yeah, we do leave a lot out. There's a lot of murder involved in what we do. You end up killing a lot of stories and things, you know. I'd say it's like 2-3 to 1 in terms of what. You go after 3 to get 1, or maybe you go after 4 to get 1.
You come out of the elevator and global warming is lying on the floor bleeding, and then you step
like,
over.
I'm sorry. Sorry, glaciers.
So sorry,
we just didn't have space for you.
Yeah. So you tiptoe across the floor until you find something that's sitting up in a chair.
And breathing a little bit. Well, there are some ideas. I'm sure there have been ideas along the way that you just absolutely loved, but you couldn't make work. Do you have any examples that you could share?
We've had some that have taken a very, very long time to work.
Robert actually had an opus on the Argentine ant that he was incubating.
I had a love of the Argentine ant that lasted for about 15 months.
What's that animal that has the longest gestation in do you remember what it was? It's
Well, this was a blue whale level of gestation.
Yeah, this was like blue whale gestation. It went on for years and years. Mm-hmm. But finally, he got it on the air.
Yeah.
Just through sheer will. We tried as hard as we could to knock it off. But no, I mean, sometimes. What was the original question?
She wants to know whether
ideas that are too
that we've thrown
away. That you loved, but you had to not.
Yeah.
You couldn't make it happen.
Well, no, actually, you know, they find their home somewhere.
Yeah, we've had some that we've really had to tussle with very hard. One time we did a show about being not nice, about
evil, really.
Evil, yeah. And another time we did a show about being good. And the good show, why would an animal do something really nice for another animal when there's no obvious evolutionary advantage to it? Very difficult problem for Darwin and others. It turned out that the answer was largely mathematical, that someone had looked at large groups of animals and had noticed patterns in their behaviors. So it became a numbers story, which was not what we were thinking we were going to be doing. And it was really dense and very hard. But frankly, when you get what you think will be a good idea and then it gets really rough, sometimes in the right mood, it's just actually pretty fun try to figure out how to get what you've just learned into someone's head cool and easy. And you think, ooh, how are we going to do that?
There used to be like a keen sense of the limitations of what you can do on the radio, like how much of a person's attention can you command? How dense can you go? But we recently did a show on color. I think you mentioned it, Robert, where we had a bizarre question that sort of popped up for us, which was like if you had a shrimp, a sparrow, a butterfly, and a dog in front of a rainbow.
And a man.
Would they all see the same rainbow? The answer is obviously no. But how do you do that on the radio? Like how do you make that a radio experience that feels vivid? And we actually got this giant choir of 160 people to sing the various configurations of the rainbow. And
it was a chorale.
It worked so well that I thought, okay, I think radio can now officially do anything.
Yeah.
I don't think there are any limitations.
And our choices, by the way, were we had either the chorale in the church up in Harlem, or we could have gone to a high school on the west side of Manhattan where there were a whole bunch of 15-year-olds who've been remarkably inventive when we give them science problems to turn into sound. And it's a chorale class. So there are people all over the place who will help you. If you say, here's the problem we wish to address, and they'll either musically or in the stage show, it's artistically or in 3D space, they will take your idea and render it. And the fact that there are so many allies out there, all you have to do is ask. I remember one moment when we were at this high school and Jad was on the floor miking 4 15-year-olds from below. And there were iPods and things that were new at the time. I didn't even know what they were, but I was trying to pretend like I did. And Jad would say, well, here, just turn this on. I had no idea where the knob was.
This wasn't like the Stone Age or something.
Anyway, but I noticed that he was sitting there, and there was a sort of look of deep beatification, which I share, which is that sometimes the blessing of this, the sheer fun of doing it, is so huge and so wonderful that you think, well, I must have been a remarkable giraffe in a previous life to deserve this kind of fun.
Well, and that's the fun that comes across. I mean, that's the fun. You guys are obviously having such a good time, even when the topic is difficult and thorny and you're having to pick your way through and try to figure out how to translate it. It still comes across as you're having just such a blast.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's like, even when we're doing science stuff, it's not, the goal isn't really to teach. It's that you just get pulled into these, like, little thickets that are really fun to try and, like, you know, try and beat your way out of. And somehow, hopefully, that joy that got you into it is infectious.
But we don't go in the same way and at the same pace and with the same confidence. And because I'd been in commercial television for a long time, the rule at ABC and CBS is when you're in deep trouble on a thick subject, cut. I can only do 7 minutes. I can only do 4 minutes. Actually, give me 2.5. Maybe 90 seconds is really what this thing deserves. And you just go down, and then you solve it by doing less. And Jad, who had been not instructed in this particular rescue operation, when we didn't understand something, his idea was to do more. And I would get like panic attacks just thinking about trying to wrestle with some of these things. He didn't know that he was supposed to be scared, so he just wasn't.
Well, you know, judging by your Argentine aunt's opus, I think that I've won you over to the idea of more at this point.
Much was learned in that story. Much wisdom was had by all.
Now, this partnership, of course, is part of what makes the show work. And for you guys, have you ever had a partnership like this?
I've never.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I've tried to partner all the time because I know I had Susan Stamberg. I partnered with Harry Smith at CBS a lot. I never have found anything like this. This is like, I don't know. It's sort of, I mean, I even did improvisational comedy with Jane Curtin and Buck Henry, and that's all about.
You
did? I did. Yeah.
I did not know that.
And you find a sort of rhythm in the beats inside. But when Jen and I, well, you're hearing it now. Like it just is sort of, it has a kind of an easy jazz like quality.
Yeah, it's fun, and it was. You know, I mean, we've worked together for a long time now, and our relationship has gone through like 25 different chapters, but the
including door slams and almost biting,
pant chewing,
pretty yeah. Sci-fi horror chapters as well. but the chemistry, the basic chemistry of like, let me sit down and talk and tell this guy about something I'm excited about, and then let me see how he receives it, and then he'll say something back. That easy chemistry was there from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the very first conversation.
And still very recently we had some very crazy movie maker, very famous movie maker who we were talking to about Truth. And I thought he was completely insane. And Jed said, no, we have to try this. It's really interesting. And at a certain point in our repeated interviewing of this guy, we suddenly hit like a gong. It was extraordinary what happened. He just suddenly said something that neither of us expected except for Jad. So he then gives me this tiny corner of the eye, screw you, fellow, look, which I love. I don't know what that is. I just love, there's a certain game in it. It's slightly competitive. It's sometimes just an act of surrender. It's a lot of interesting things.
Yeah. And, you know, one more thing on this, the thing that I find really spooky continually about working with Robert is the way in which I'll think I've got, like, whatever it is we're working on, I'll think I've got it, the solution. Like, I know what this story needs, or I know what the show needs to do, and I'll just feel completely certain in my opinion. And then Robert will come in and he'll say that one thing, and I'll think, oh, of course, he's told that's it. You're so right, and it's really spooky and humbling to have that kind of partnership where you're never quite there until the other person says something or looks at you in a certain way. You think, okay, now I'm there.
Well, it's safe, and I would say it's also alchemical. It's like you come together and something completely different and unexpected comes out of that partnership.
That's a good way to put it. I think that's right.
I mean, I had a very visceral experience where my kids, who at the time were in their late teens, had grown indifferent to my work. So I'd be on television and they'd get up, walk out right in the middle. You know how many, like when you like make these things, you don't want anyone to sneeze because they'll miss that inglorious cut that you made right there. Ooh, and listen to this phrase. So you just don't want eyelashes to drop. But when they get up and go to the kitchen, that's just, as a parent, you can do nothing but just sit there forlornly and say, woe is me. And then Jad began taking some of the things I was working on and began cutting them. And then my kids stayed locked, fixed with interest. And
I paid them. I mean, I gave them a couple bucks, you know.
I thought, wow, like what is happening? I mean, it wasn't entirely flattering to me because I, but I mean, I know my business. My business is to be heard. And if I can find someone in the world who can help me be heard by folks who are well younger than me, then I'll just do that, you know. And that's the orchestral part. That's the part where somehow below the level of what's being said, there is this sense of beauty or tension or fright or melancholy, things that musicians are very, very aware of. Jad can just put in just subtly or pull out or emphasize or exclaim or bury. He can do all of the music things. And that's what's been added here, I think.
And it's very, very cool that it is.
Yeah.
Well, Robert and Jad, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. This has been really fun.
Robert Krolwich and Jad Abumrad are the hosts of Public Radio's Radiolab. We first spoke to them before their stage production here in Milwaukee in September. We'll take another break now, and when we return, we'll meet Milwaukee-area sculptor Richard Adelman. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.